Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, this hour, we've got some wonderful information to share with you. We don't always want to take the time, necessarily, unless it's a very personal message for us, which is the case with my guest today. But if you don't believe that one person can make a difference, I think our story today is going to make a difference in your thinking. Because it always begins with a single step of choice. And that was the case with Asha Prober, who is my guest today. We're going to be talking about a man who had a tremendous influence on her life, as well as many thousands of others, not because of anything other, in my estimation, having read his story, than he walked the talk that he shared with others. And he had perspectives of wisdom that I think are timeless and belong to everyone. My guest today, Asha Prober, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's delightful to be here with you.
Now, this is a story about Swami Kriyananda.
Right.
And it is something that you wrote. And as I was reading the material on the man, you didn't try to make it what I would call a holier-than-thou piece of writing.
Right.
That may be a little bit crass on my part to say it that way, but I just like to call it as I see it. You wrote the story about a man who had his own particular journey, who had his own experiences, and through his experiences, he then tried to empower others. And, of course, that is the theme of my show always, empowering other people. And that's why I was so impressed with what you wrote, Asha. Now, let me give a little bit of background on you to my listening audience. This is about your experience that intertwined with this man's life. You and your husband are the spiritual directors of Ananda in Palo Alto, California, and you've been working very earnestly with that since 1987.
Right.
But you really embarked on a journey as a student, and it started in the 60s for you.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you hadn't been around a while before then,
uh-huh.
But this is a journey that was to really change your life. And you said in your book, it was late November of 1969, you were at Stanford University.
Right.
Tell us how that journey began.
Well, I was already a truth seeker. I think I had been since I was born. But I had my journey had focused by that point on the concept of, well, I guess what you would call self-realization through meditation. But I found it very difficult to become actually walk the talk. I just didn't know how to live what I believed in. And I was at Stanford, and Swami Kriyananda, who's actually an American man, even though he has an Indian name, he was invited to give a lecture. And I went to hear him, and it was really one of those moments that I would never have believed it if it hadn't happened to me. He walked into the room, just strided into the room with a great deal of energy, but as soon as he came in, I could sense in him, the way it came to me intuitively, was he had what I was seeking. And by that I meant he had the state of consciousness, the attitude toward life, the way of living, which is what I wanted, but I couldn't figure out how to manifest it, and there it was manifested in front of me. And
you made a statement in your book that Swamiji, the term means, Swami means teacher.
Right.
And I think so many times people want to make words bigger than what they are. And J-I, is a suffix denoting both affection and respect.
Right.
So this, when you say someone is a Swamiji, you are honoring and respecting a teacher. It's not unlike our saying Dr. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so. It is a an inclination of respect, which I thought was quite a nice statement to make.
Right.
And he was a protege of Paramahansa Yogananda, which a lot of my listeners may well identify with because Yogananda had quite a reputation. But I liked what you said also, that this is a biography of consciousness.
Right.
And I think that's what was so meaningful to me when I read through it, because I think wisdom comes in all kinds of costumes.
Right.
And every culture has their wise ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a man who wanted to share his wisdom so people could be wiser, regardless of their background or experience. And he never considered anybody stupid. He just said, well, you were just where you are. So let's start that journey where you open up in the very first part of your book with a quote, softer than the flower where kindness is concerned, stronger than the thunder where principles are at stake.
Right.
And those are very, very powerful words.
It's very rare to meet that exact combination. Sometimes people of willpower and energy lack the sensitivity to be successful in human relations. Sometimes people who are sensitive to others lack the willpower to really achieve in life. And in Swami Kriyananda, it was a perfect combination, is a perfect combination. He's still living. And he just has always had this ability. You know, One of the qualities of him as a leader, which is so unusual, is that he's never asked for followers, asked anybody to follow him, or called anybody a follower, a devotee, a disciple. He simply lives his life with a great deal of enthusiasm, and those who want to walk the journey with him are welcome to do so. It's much more a life of friendship than anything else, and in many ways, what I learned from him is that the truest form of teaching is really friendship. Even Christ in the Bible says that toward the end of his life. He says, you call me master, but I call you friend. And then Christ goes on to say, because if you call me master, then the servant is never really the partner of the master's business, but friend to friend, we walk the path as equals. And that is the goal of any true teacher, is not to make himself important, but to bring everyone up to their own highest potential, which should be whatever one can achieve, all can achieve. And so his way of relating to us, and I've known Swami Kriyananda since 1969. I've worked closely with him. I've traveled with him. I've seen him every day for years at a time. And it's always been one of tremendous attention to the individual welfare, simultaneously absolute dedication to principle, and a complete uncompromising sense of truth. But truth also includes kindness to others. And in the book, I tell many, many stories of my own experience with him and the experience of others, in which time after time, what you see is this first, this absolute adherence to true principle, not willing to sacrifice anything just for self-aggrandizement, and this extraordinary sense of patience and respect for others, based not even so much on cultivating the right attitude, but just perceiving that way. There's one story that I tell in there where when I met Swami, he was in his early 40s and I was in my early 20s. So there were many years in which I was essentially growing up, but I had a lot of responsibilities and I worked closely with him. And in all those years, he always treated me as an equal. He always listened attentively to what I said, even when my ideas were foolish. He never referred to my age or my lack of experience. Years later, when I found myself in a leadership position having to deal with people who are two decades younger than me, and naturally, the thought crosses your mind sometimes, you know, that I have more experience than you, perhaps, you know, my ideas are more important than yours. Swami Kriyananda had conscientiously trained me not to give expression to those thoughts, but they would cross my mind. So I very much appreciated how respectfully he had treated me all those years, and the next time I saw him, which was not long after the thought came to me, I said to him how much I appreciated the fact that in all the years we worked together, he never once referred to the difference in our ages. And he took my compliment graciously, but then he said quite simply, I never noticed, is what he said. He said, age is a factor of the body. The soul is infinite and ageless. He said, when I look at people, I never think of how old they are. He said, not even children. I just see their consciousness and relate to their consciousness. And many times through the years with him, I would think that he was expressing a good attitude, only later to understand that there was no attitude involved. It was simply his perception of reality.
I really like one of his stories. He has a good sense of humor, too.
Oh, he has a great
really like this. You tell the story about how he was a guest of honor at an elementary school event, and a little girl asked him how old he was. Mm-hmm. And he said, let me put it this way, when I was your age, you were an old woman.
Right.
And yet this child seemed to understand what he was saying, and she just walked away.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was so cute.
It was a very nice moment.
Yes. And he mentions also how the truth can be spoken in a minute. Mm-hmm. It's self-justification that takes a long time. And I think that that's part of the journey of any of us, that we want to often make it more difficult than what it is, but that's part of growing up. I mean, your story and your involvement with him, and you were stubborn. There were a lot of things that you did. But what I respected about what you wrote is that throughout the expressions, the conversations, as he called them, with people, which I really liked. I think that's a very good word to use, conversation.
Uh-huh.
It was never to try to change anyone. And you mentioned this a moment ago. It was trying to enable others that he came in contact with to recognize that which was within themselves that had value, to honor that, to respect it, and to grow with it. And I like, too, what he said about living in the now. And to me, that was a lesson that is very, very difficult to learn, because you're ingrained from the time you're born that you must prepare for your responsibilities for your future. It's very difficult to reach that point of insight and understanding where you realize that what you do now automatically creates your future. If you're disciplined today, that discipline is going to bring the results that you so desire to have, and because the results of your actions will flow. I mean, that's just what's going to happen. But it's very difficult to be able to do that. And you experienced that yourself.
Oh yes, many times with him, and just how the mind just reaches out for anything but the present. Swamiji actually uses that ability to live in the now in a particular way. One of the stories in the book in which he talks about it was actually he has always made it a habit, and he's done a lot of dental work, had to have work on his teeth done, and he rarely or never, if the dentist will allow it, takes any Novocaine.
That blew me away when I read that story.
He's had root canal without Novocaine. He broke a tooth and it had to be extracted, and he had a cap put on. He had it all without Novocaine, and he sits perfectly still while it's happening. The dentist, in one of the stories I tell, it just happened to be in Italy when it happened, but the dentist said afterwards, you know, how were you able to stand that? And Swamiji just said, well, I just concentrate, as he put it, on the infinite now, on the fact that, you know, whatever's happening in this moment encompasses all of infinity. And even if he says there's a little pain, as he puts it in another place, he said, I've had a good life. Having a little pain now and then is no problem. And you just think of, he said, it's not just a question of, you live in the moment, but not for the moment, is how he phrased it, and then went on to explain in the moment means in the infinity of the moment, not for the temporary experience that's happening in the moment. And it's a very important distinction, because sometimes when we get too far into these philosophies, we don't know how to be natural. And what Swamiji has always shown us is how to be very natural. Because the momentary experience that one is having is often, or sometimes at least, it's quite painful. Our hearts get broken, our bodies get injured, people we love are in trouble. It's naive to say that I could always be cheerful through all of that. It would be unfeeling to be so. And if we try to be spiritual by being unfeeling, we're not really emulating the true teachers. So what he's trying to say is, you don't live for that moment of experience, but you live in the infinite behind that moment of experience. And it's a very important distinction that he makes that way. And that's why he could cognize what's happening in his mouth, let's say, for the dental work, as pain. But the moment is not what I'm living for. I'm living for the infinite behind it. So what difference does it make?
I really like his attitude regarding the environment that we find ourselves in today. And I'm talking about not just a personal environment, but a national and a global environment. And when people are subjected to bombardment of certain information, which we are on a daily basis. I mean, you can experience that bombardment of negativity standing in a grocery store, or you can listen to it on the radio, or you can see it on television with all of its graphicness. And he addresses fear, which I think is very good. He said, when you increase your fears, when you become very apprehensive, when you release your awareness of your own space and put it into the other space, which creates such a level of fear inside of you, you create more of that very environment that
right.
you're wanting to get rid of. And I like what he said to someone. He said, the only way to change the world is by changing consciousness, above all, by changing your own consciousness. Everything else is just a symptom. I prefer to work on the cause,
right.
which is consciousness itself, and that means taking personal responsibility for your mind.
Right, exactly.
And that's not easy. I have had conversations with people who, my goodness, putting it bluntly, the world's going to hell in a handbasket and nobody has a hope or a prayer, and we all better just realize we're all going to be destitute, da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, well, you can focus on that, but what else could you possibly do to make a shift, make a change?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because just as he goes about in his life, being consciously present in the now,
mm-hmm.
stating, this is what I do, I am helping to educate people to understand it is where they put their minds, where they put their emotions, where
mm-hmm.
they put their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You live in the moment that you have, and you can transform your world, and it's like a ripple effect, and it will very gently do its own work.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I started, you know, I was a child of the 60s, so to speak, and I was part of the revolution that just sort of turned away from a lot of materialistic living, and I, all these 40-some years later, have stayed on that track. I never re-entered materialistic life in the sense of having material ambitions. I've served a spiritual cause my whole life and built a couple of spiritual communities and, you know, lead a spiritual organization now. It's not that I've been destitute. I've lived quite comfortably, but I've never had any ambitions except to serve others in this way. But the point of it is, I've often said to people, you know, there's no problem solving the problems of the world right now. There's plenty of resources. There's plenty of creativity. There's no will to solve them. And the problem is not anything to do with anything external. The problem is there is no will to solve those problems because too much consciousness is self-centered. And people will not give up self-centered consciousness until they discover that they get more joy from a more selflessly centered consciousness. And the only way to express that is first by example and then by inspiration. And many of the things that we started, you know, back in those wild and woolly days of going back to the land and milking goats and eating organic foods, when I became a vegetarian, when I started baking whole grain bread, I used to have to make all my own natural foods because you couldn't buy anything. And no government, no world organization, no United Nations ever decided, let there be whole wheat bread in the Safeway store. It's just that consciousness shifted, and that's what people wanted. And then the society begins to manifest what the consciousness actually is. And so even now, you know, people like you and me and others like us are just influencing consciousness, raising awareness of a happier, more fulfilling way of life. And it's all about happiness. People will not do it for fear. They will not do it for guilt. They will not do it for rules. They will do it when they discover that it's a greater happiness to live in a certain way. And until people discover it, you're just talking to the winds.
My guest today is Asha Proverb. We're talking about a mentor that she has had, Swami Kriyananda. And this man's story to me was very impressive because I believe one person can make a difference, and this is one man who's made a difference in the lives of thousands. As I said at the beginning of the interview, walking the walk, not just talking the talk. And I think that that is what has made his association with so many people over the years so very, very special. And he's never, ever forced his beliefs on anyone. And I liked what he said regarding, especially as you worded it, Asha, truth versus fantasy. To overcome means to face the truth, not run away from it, to see a situation for what it is.
Right.
And then what you do, you raise your own energy level and your consciousness to the point where a person's behavior, whatever the environment is no longer going to affect how you feel. It reminds me of a woman that I saw one day in my own neighborhood. And unknown to me, she was a part of a group, just a small group of people, of neighbors, that decided they were going to have on a beautiful spring day, it was bright and clear outside, that they were going to go out and just pick up trash. And that's all she did. She went around just for hours, no big deal, and when I found out her story, I was so surprised. She said, you know what, I didn't realize how much trash there was around. I never thought until I was able to participate in this, and now I'm just astonished and amazed.
Huh.
And we proceeded to have a conversation. So here was a small group of people, I think it was only about 10 of them, in a neighborhood that was a good 5 to 7 mile radius that they were doing this in, and each of them had their little assigned portions. No rewards for this other than the personal satisfaction of getting it done, and it may sound rather trite to some of my listeners, but it's a good way to give an example. That woman, all by herself, in just the one area she had, cleaned up a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So as we have evolved, we have come to understand that trash can be recycled,
mm-hmm.
that we need to be aware of what we're doing with our water, we need to be aware of how we're treating the environment we're living in, and there are changes that are coming through, and lots of times it's very difficult because what do you do with those changes? Are you going to let go of the old? How is this going to affect this, that, and the other so that we can move forward? And it is always a challenge. But when you make it okay and you say, well, it's going to happen, just like you said with the whole wheat breads and seeds and all of this, now we've got natural food stores that are all over the place. You can buy all kinds of wonderful foods, mm-hmm. and you have choices now that didn't exist back in the 60s when you started on your own particular journey.
Right.
It's quite amazing.
It's you know, one of the things that Swami Kriyananda has instigated, which was an inspiration of his guru, Paramhansa Yogananda. He's the author of Autobiography of a Yogi, which many people have read. Yogananda came to America from India, and one of the ideals he had was to start small, cooperative, spiritually-based communities. And Ananda, the organization Kriyananda founded, we have 7 communities in the world now. I've helped start 2 of them. And the idea is that people live in an otherwise quite, you know, recognizable, ordinary way, but the difference is that God is at the center and meditation is the practice. Here in Palo Alto, we took a master lease on an apartment complex and just moved in all our people. Apartments are natural communities if your neighbors are your friends. And so we've been living here now for, 15 or 16 years together. And it's just it's a wonderful way to live. You just look out your balcony and your best friends are just a few feet away from you and you can just come out your door and we have a meditation temple and a place where we share meals together and the children can play very safely in the community environment. And many people who live here just go out into, I live in Silicon Valley, they just go out into Silicon Valley and they have their basic high-tech jobs, or they're, you know, nurses or doctors. But we all come back to this cooperative living, and it really begins to create a magnetism that allows many other things to happen. It's very hard in this age to hold to these ideals when you're the only one. And so banding together with like-minded souls, the loneliness and the isolation that people feel in this age, it's really an epidemic. It's like a disease. And we need now to people who share ideals to put their lives together in ways that allow, we call it cooperation rather than communal, because people want their independence and their privacy. Living in apartments, we all have our own kitchens if we want them. But we also have the opportunity to come together by choice. And I've been living in community now since 1971. I can't imagine living any other way. I just couldn't conceive of living in an isolated home. you know, maybe I'll have a few friendly neighbors, but it's quite different to be with like-minded souls. And that was has been one of Swami Kriyananda's enormous contributions, is to really establish communities on a very viable basis that I think will be very popular in the years to come. I think it's like the whole wheat bread was in the 60s. I think the communities are going to be an ideal for the future. So often when people describe the dilemmas of their lives, I know they would be solved by community. You can do businesses together. We have schools for our children. You know, it's just so many of the problems that people face, if you just pool resources in the right way with the right spirit, so much can be done.
Oh, I agree with you. I like what he said about how people confuse wisdom with intellectual learning.
Yes, it's true.
Or with the pleasure some deep thinkers find in making clearly reasoned explanations. True wisdom, however, is intuitive. It is an arrow that goes straight to its mark, while the intellect lumbers with labored breathing far behind. And it reminded me of something that I was reviewing this morning about the kahunas of Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
And that is something that they state very clearly in their cultures. So the wisdom that he has shared with so many people is an ageless wisdom. It is a wisdom that belongs to any and all generations. It is a wisdom that is meant to empower people, to help them realize that they have choices, that they are in an opportune positioning to be able to do what they really earnestly want to do it, and can do it with a sense of recognition that it's making a difference, even though you can't see it. You don't have to be listed on the front of People magazine to make a mark or be on Fortune 500. There are so many things that are done quietly, and I think when you can just look at life in general and just stop and ask yourself, how is it that a loaf of bread got to a store? Who was involved in producing meat or vegetables or the protective coverings to make sure that the food is healthy by the time you get it? All of these things, there are so many factors that go in and so many millions of people that participate. So when one of those things is out of order, that's when you hear the news, gee whiz, such and such is recalled, or what, you know, this, thus, that, or so occurs. And it's because something is out of sync. And it all is governed by people in our world. That is what we have to remember. It's not a government. It's not a system of any kind. It's the people that establish that. And I think that your loving mentor, Swami Kriyananda, is a man that has a lot of wisdom to share. And you did a beautiful job with the book. Asha, how can people find out more about the book and about this wonderful man? I know you have a website. Would you give out that website, please?
The website I'd suggest is dooroftheheart.com. That'll take you right to the book, which is called Swami Kriyananda, As We Have Known Him. It's dooroftheheart.com. And just click on that, and you'll find the book is listed there.
Now, how old is he today?
He'll be 82 in about a month.
82 years young.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still got a lot of good experiences yet to have.
Well, he lives in India most of the time now, but he's going to spend the summer in America, and we'll be having some big events with him here in Palo Alto in July. So if anybody wants to see him, you can click on Swami Kriyananda 2008, and you'll see our programs there.
That'll be wonderful. This is Donna Sebo. I do want to give out the information. Swami Kriyananda, As We Have Known Him, Asha Praver is the woman that has written his story. He's 82 years young, and he will have a lot more to share and give, even though he does live in India for most of the time at this point in his life. And he's going to be coming back to the United States. So do go to the website, dooroftheheart.com, dooroftheheart.com. And Asha, is there a thought you'd like to leave my audience 30 seconds before we say goodbye?
I just think that there's tremendous possibilities within our own consciousness. And if we open ourselves with devotion and with a willingness to learn, then true transformation is right there to be absorbed within us.
Thank you very much for being my guest again. Swami Kriyananda, a man's story that I think shows that one person can make a difference. You can do the same thing. He's a good teacher and a good book. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Asha, thank you again for being my guest. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and while we were off here, I was chatting with the young lady that is handling and operating the equipment this afternoon for the show, and my trip to California was absolutely glorious. I mean, it was in the low 70s to middle 70s. The sun was shining, and here in the Pacific Northwest, yes, I'm back in my own home turf, the wind is blowing, the temps are down, and it's very gray outside, and it's been raining. So what a difference. But that's the way the world turns, and hey, we love the Pacific Northwest. That's what keeps us all so green here. But ooh-wee, get used to that sunshine. It's pretty tough to leave it behind. You sort of want to hitch a lasso around it and sort of pull it back up with you. And for some reason, the 747s just don't do very well with that. It just doesn't seem to stay linked. But anyway, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. And if you'd like to chat with me, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. For you Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And then our direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, if you're brand new to the show and you've never done this before, you wonder what I'm talking about, well, I do readings for you on the air. I consider myself an information resource, and I'm delighted to be able to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. So give me a buzz. All I'll need from you is your first name or your initial, and after that, let me talk, and then I will always want to know where you're calling from, of course. And then you're welcome to ask a question about whatever you like. So again, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. I also want to express my appreciation to Steve Harrison, his staff, Nancy and Marion, and the other people that made my appearances at the Universal Sheraton in Universal City, so very, very special. It was wonderful to meet all of the great people that I was able to interact with and to be able to be a speaker. It really was quite a special experience. And again, I want to thank them because they made it very, very pleasant. And just going back to what we were discussing in the first half hour, it is amazing how many people, when they come together, and when you are of like mind, you still can be your own individual self, but when you really want to be around individuals that are making a difference collectively, when you can link together and you can support each other, things happen. Changes evolve. We do go forward. We don't have to go backwards. The same can be said about being in reverse, but it is where you put your attention. Have you ever noticed when it comes into spring, at least up here in the Pacific Northwest, we have to be aware of the weather. We have to be aware that if we're going to put bulbs out into the ground, we want to sense a time when it's appropriate to do it. Some of the plants, you want to put them in the fall. Other times, you want to plant them after the last frost, or maybe what would be considered the first heavy frost of spring, if it should occur. And you want to take care. You want to prepare the earth. You want to put the nutrients in it. You want to make sure that you do everything you can. But then there comes a point when you can't do any more with it, and you have to let it be. You can't make it grow. And if you go out after you've put bulbs in the ground and you don't see anything for a couple of weeks, then you go out with your little spade and you dig it all up and you go, I don't see anything happening. Well, maybe when you dig it up, there's this little itsy-bitsy sprout that's on a section of the bulb. You go, oh, it looks like something's happening. You put it back down in the ground, you cover it up, and you go back a couple of weeks later and say, I still am not seeing anything. What if I did something wrong? So then you pull it up. Now, eventually, you'll kill the bulb, or you're going to stunt its growth so much that it'll never achieve its own momentum. Like baking a cake or anything else, there are times you have to let the law work for you. And when I say the law, when you're planting something in the earth, you have to allow it to evolve in its time as it is going to do it. When you are baking a cake, you have to put it in the oven. It's all liquid. It will become solidified. But if you open the door to the oven every 6 seconds or every 6 minutes, this thing is going to end up being flatter than a pancake, and you're going to say, gee whiz, it's just like leather. What happened? Alfred Hitchcock, who put together so many phenomenal movies, one of which is Psycho, and there's just so many others that he did, this man hated mystery like you wouldn't believe, and yet he put together some of the greatest movies that ever were done, evolving around the unknown, about the mystery of not having everything put in place. It said that his wife, whenever she was baking, he couldn't stand it. He was always opening the oven door, and he just ruined so many things that she wanted to cook. Finally, she said, okay, Alfred, you're going to have to buy me an oven, one with a window in it, because I won't have you messing up any more of my dishes. And he would sit in front of that oven, watching what he considered the miraculous event. Maybe it was a cake rising, maybe it was a turkey browning, whatever it was. And he'd sit right in front of that oven, wanting to watch everything moment by moment by moment, but knowing also he didn't have any control over it. So sometimes with life, we put out our intention, and we have to make it okay that that intention is going to have a life of its own. And it may manifest itself in some of the most interesting ways. You just never know what's going to evolve for you. And sometimes, if you are a person that likes to have things in order, I know I am, lots of times you want to plan everything out to the nth degree, saying, well, this is it, 13 seconds, this is what we do, 15 seconds, this is what we do, half an hour, this is what we do. Organization is fine, but sometimes when things go wacky, you have to allow that your own momentum is going to be able to maintain itself. It's really fascinating, absolutely amazing how many times I've seen that in place. Have you ever been in a situation where you've tried your darndest to make something happen, and then you said, oh, fiddle-dee-dee, this isn't ever going to work. I got to figure something else out. You had already put your intention into direction, and as soon as you let go of trying to own it, to possess it, bingo, things fall into place. It's happened to me so many times in my life that I just know it's a reality. Doesn't mean I don't keep trying to sometimes manipulate and control, and other times you just let it go. And when you let it go, one, you've got a monkey off your back, but two, because you've done everything you possibly can physically, just like putting that bulb in the ground in your garden. And the rest has to make its own self work. The moment, the intention is there, the right environment is there, and then it has to allow to develop. You know, that's what we do as human beings. We develop ourselves, that momentum. And we have to be patient with ourselves sometimes. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. Canadians 888-815-9756. Or 530-876-3222. Now, I want to remind those of you in the state of Washington of an absolutely awesome event that is evolving, and that is the Pacific Northwest Women's Show. It's being held in Seattle, Washington. And I know we've got a caller, but I want to be sure and let those of you know in Washington, I'm going to be in a booth there. I'm also going to be speaking each day. We're going to be talking about the power of one, but I'll be there to do wonderful interactions with you, with many consultations, and I'm going to have a plethora of books from various authors there that are just going to be wonderful for you to be able to get for literally next to nothing. So don't forget the Northwest Women's Show. You can go on the web. You can check it out. Get all of the information. It's the 28th, the 29th, and 30th. And also, Teresa Tapp, who is on my show once a month regarding wellness, and she's going to be on with me this month, but she's going to be appearing there as well. This all evolved beautifully, and I'm so looking forward to being able to meet with her in person. I've talked with her so many times. She's a gracious lady, and you'll have a chance to meet Teresa and see what she's all about. So for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, you know that this is an opportunity. Gals, it's time to play. Oh, you're going to have such a good time. Wonderful, wonderful time. Well, let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
This is Lyle from Indianapolis.
Hi, Lyle.
How are you doing?
Well, I am doing magnificently. I hope you're enjoying some warmer temperatures.
Well, it was 55 and raining today. I'm in Indianapolis, and it was warm yesterday, but it's warm and raining today.
Warm and raining today.
Yes, it's supposed to get back in the 30s tomorrow. It's
about
57
now. Okay,
you're
going to have to put your bathing suit away.
I think I'd scare people if I was in one. So.
Yes, I have to always laugh at that because whenever any of us from the northern areas of the country go down into the southern areas, I mean, it's just amazing how the temperatures get so much warmer and people are astonished that we're not wearing heavy coats and all this kind of stuff, and it's just our thermostats work differently.
Right.
Okay, Lyle, let's get down to business with you. The first thing I am looking at in your world is the word discouragement. And I'm looking at the discouragement, and I'm seeing you needing to work with the discouragement as you would a batch of putty. And you need to be able to look the discouragement right in the eye and ask yourself why it's pushing your buttons the way it is. And the reason being is that this is something you need to get past. You're giving it too much of your energy, too much of your power, if you will, and you need to mold it and knead it until it gets new structure, until you can put together a new design. You are not going backwards. This is just part of the journey. And so whatever this discouragement is relating to, look at it, set a timer for 5 minutes, get into a real good pity party. When the timer goes off, say, okay, now I shift, I go into something else. Don't stay with it. You need to look at it, understand why your buttons are being pushed, then move on. Because it's just short term. It's not something that's big term at all. Also, I want you to get busy with your writing. I am seeing something of a historical nature that you've always had an interest in. And I think that's a good way for you to do a mind shift, is to step into that different frame of mind and enter into that bit of history and just go into, again, that shift mentally. And you'll come out of it feeling refreshed. Okay. What question do you have for me today?
Okay. I have a court case that I'm going to on March 13th, and I wanted to find out if I will be successful in that at that hearing.
The image I'm getting in my mind is one of a straight line. It's like a flat line. I don't think anything really moving on it. So whatever this is relating to, it is something that I don't see you moving forward with it, and I don't see you going backwards with it. Again, it's just like a flat line. I don't know that a whole bunch is going to be resolved. I would say, before you go into the courtroom, that you do some meditation and put yourself in the state of mind of clarity, and that you have your information and your details clearly thought out. And if you have an attorney representing you, the two of you must be on the same wavelength. And I would suggest if you have an attorney with you, you have a meeting before you go into this situation. And it may be put on hold. It may not be something that there is going to be a major decision on. There may be another step that will have to be experienced.
It's basically, if I win, it's just to hear a motion. The other side is trying to stop it, and I have to explain why it should go forward. So basically, this is just the first step. If I succeed, then I can go forward with it. If not, it would stop there.
Well, I don't see it going forward, and I don't see it stopping. So it's just like a flat line.
Okay.
And I think you just need to go in with preparation and don't really have expectation. I would say go in with the information and do the presentation and have clarity.
Okay.
And that will do more good than if you go into all kinds of emotional ups and downs, because the emotional ups and downs aren't going to resolve anything.
Right. You're right. I have the facts. I just have to do my little outline for the presentation that I need to give.
Mm-hmm. And have clarity.
Okay.
No does and us. You are very clear. You're very open and non-antagonistic, just very open and allowing, again, clarity. I just have to use that. That's the word that is being emphasized.
Okay.
I have to go, Lyle. We've got to take a break.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo. By the way, I'm going to try to get my email newsletter out. I apologize. We have had some major problems with our computer. We've had a system check, and apparently we had some interesting technological gadgetry on the part of somebody else that was interfering with what we had. So we've done some spyware checking and all this kind of stuff, and we've been able to locate some of the challenges that have created a mucky mess, to be perfectly blunt. So if you want to email me, you can email me at donna@delphiinternational.com. If you should have a problem, please call my office at 800-872-8852. We are trying to get this all cleared up, but my email newsletter will go out either today or tomorrow, and you'll have it. Meanwhile, on bbsradio.com, you're going to get a listing of all my guests, and I have some phenomenal people this month, one of which who I want to mention to you. There's going to be an hour dedicated to this man. It's Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Now, he is an Apollo 14 astronaut. The book is going to be titled The Way of the Explorer, but you will hear live here on BBS Radio this interview with this man who is a part of history and is continuing to make history because of what he experienced and his involvement and development of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. So we are going to have a tremendous show. We have a tremendous show every day. I really, really so appreciate the talented people that are around me. Now, if you want to call me, you can give me a buzz at 877-8765-227 for the show this afternoon, and we are going to be able to take your call. I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little insight. 877-8765-227 or 888-815-9756 in Canada. Don't forget, you can get a listing. I finished putting that in today of all the guests that are going to be coming up on the Donna Sebo Show during this month of March. And you know what? You don't have to miss any of the shows. I know you're so busy, you're working, but use the archives. That way, you can be working on the computer, maybe doing your taxes, whatever it is that you've got to do, answering emails, and you can listen to the wonderful people that I have as guests on my show. Tomorrow, we are going to be getting up-to-date information about the Silicon Dragon. You wonder what that's related to? Well, maybe you've already figured it out, and that is related to China. We're going to be talking about technology, the fast-moving advances that the Chinese are making. You know, there's over 600,000 engineers graduating from universities in China every year, and the U.S. doesn't have anything close to that. We really need to wake up the educational systems in this nation and get excited about teaching our children again and having them realize that they have a phenomenal future ahead of them. Well, Silicon Dragon, we're going to be talking about China big time, all of the things that are going on there. It's sort of like what was going on here in the United States in the 60s. Then we've got half-price living for those of you that love shopping for bargains. Woo! I love to do that. I have more fun doing that. It's just great. You can get quality. Yes, you can. You don't have to have junk. You can get good quality. Ellie Kay is going to be my guest on Wednesday. Then we're going to be talking with Robin Kelly in New Zealand, Human Antennae. This is a fascinating, fascinating person. And we human beings have so much more potential, and we're just beginning to recognize it. Now, there have always been those people that have, but how many of us are willing to recognize it about ourselves? And then click, George Fraser is going to be my guest on Friday. We're going to be talking about communication and how we as individuals can improve our communication skills in business, in personal relationships, oh, on so many levels. Wonderful lineup of guests. You're not going to want to miss any of them. And if you want to chat with me, 877-876-5227, Canadians, 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. For those of you in Alaska who are listening to the show, I am going to be traveling up to your magnificent state next week. So we'll be doing programming live from Anchorage, Alaska next week. But in the interim, this is Donna Sebo broadcasting from the Puget Sound, where we have got winds blowing, drops of rain are kissing the ground here, and we are going to just have one of those brisk spring days. Everything's growing like a weed. Do you think animals are smarter than you think? Well, they are. And having been around some animals and done a lot of observations through the years, animals have emotions. Boy, has it taken a long time for people to get to that point unless they've done a lot of work with animals. I've interviewed people who are specialists and trainers with elephants, with wild cats. I had a wonderful experience when I was in Ohio being on the floor with a cheetah, and that was a very moving moment. Little did I realize how much power was in one of those tails. If you've ever been whacked by a cheetah's tail, you know it, believe me. And so often we like to put animals in the dumb animal category, and I just shake my head whenever I hear that. They process things differently. Their life patterns are different. And most cultures that have stayed very close to the earth, wherever they've been on the globe, have always paid attention to the natural way that animals do things, and they've learned from them. Dogs, for example, they feel love and they feel jealousy. They have tremendous emotions, and any of you that are dog lovers like myself, you know that. Uh-oh, you know what? We're out of time. I just realized that. Well, I'm having such a good time with you. I just saw time go by in a blink of an eye. Well, we've got more time to spend together this week, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com, The Donna Sebo Show. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll continue this conversation about animals tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.